Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, all three engines up and burning, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the star.
Hello, everyone. This is Valerie Ector, your host for Engineered Wellness, How to Live and Thrive in Today's Stressful World. And I am coming to you from a very cold and a very windy Sioux Falls, South Dakota. However, we are broadcast around the world. And I'm hunkered down here. It's definitely getting to be winter time. We can tell that the snow's not flying quite yet. But the temperatures are dropping, and Thanksgiving's right around the corner. And, you know, it's a great time to, you know, really focus on sleep. I want to talk about that for just 1 minute. As most of you know, I have a nearly 18-month-old daughter, Madison, who I would say is anti-sleep. This little girl just functions on just a few hours of sleep a day, it seems like. Yet, before I had her, I was the type of person that needed 7 to 8 hours of sleep in order to, I guess, as my husband would put it, not be cranky and irritable. but, you know, I want to talk about sleep because it is so important. And actually our guest today, Ms. Mel Edwards, she will talk about how sleep affected her as well, too. Lack of sleep, I should say. And, you know, one of the things that sleep does, and every person's different. You know, this is where the whole theme of engineered wellness, the name of my show, came into play. I used that title, engineered wellness, mainly because of two things. I'm an engineer by trade, but then secondly, every person is different. We all need different things. We need different amounts of sleep, different types of foods. We're all different. And engineered comes into play because when it comes to wellness and well-being, we need to engineer that based on who we are and what affects us and how our body thrives on it. And so when it comes to sleep, for me, you know, I need that 7 to 8 hours. Some people need only 5 to 6, and they function great on that. But regardless of how much you need it. And make sure that you're listening to your body and getting the appropriate amounts that make you feel like a great person. I mean, the effects of sleep make me, if I get a great night's sleep, I mean, I'm happier, I feel better, I'm more confident as a person, I think more clearly, I'm more stable, meaning my anxiety doesn't creep up on me, and I'm less irritable. And to top that off, I think I make better choices not only when it comes to my food or the nourishment that I use every day to feed my body, but just better choices in general. And so my theme for the day today is get your sleep, however many hours a day that may be, but just make it a point to do that. Now, many of the clients I deal with say, well, I can't sleep. It's a problem for me. I have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. So I want to talk about just a few quick tips to help with sleep. One of the things that I always focus on is a bedtime routine. Now, my routine involves dry brushing first before a shower, which we can get into that later, but it's just more or less massaging the skin with a dry brush. Taking a shower, putting Madison to bed, just finishing up some quick tasks around the house, getting into bed, watching TV for just a quick 10 minutes, and I'm usually out like a light. That's my routine. I stick with it every single night, regardless of how late it may be. But I generally try to stick with a particular time, whether it be 9 or 10 o'clock, and that's what helps me. Now, if you need to practice meditation or breathing techniques, which is another thing I typically do even before that process, try that. Limit your caffeine hours before bedtime. And as we've always heard, limit the amount of screen time we have before bed, because that will also affect how our circadian rhythms go. So those are just a few quick tips on how to sleep better, because I think we can all be happier and healthier and a little less irritable, which is going to be important coming up next week for the holidays and being around friends and family. So that's just a quick tip for all those folks listening today. And I do want to give the call-in number real quick here before I talk to my guest. We do have Mel Edwards today, and the guest call-in number is 646-716-7979. I'll repeat that one more time. It's 646-716-7979. We definitely want to get some callers on the line because my guest today has a ton of knowledge and has been through quite a bit, and I think she can provide some great feedback to my listeners. So welcome to the show, Mel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and your books and everything going on?
Sure. I am working half-time for a university, Montana State University Northern, and I'm a curriculum writer for them. And then the other half-time, I'm an author now, finally, after years of putting it off, thanks to a wonderful coach that I have. And I've put out 5 books this year, and a couple of them I'm here to talk about today.
Absolutely. Now, Mel has, she mentioned she's written 5 books this year, which is amazing. And a couple of them are Depression Smackdown. And Mel, I just heard you give a description of why you decided to go with Depression Smackdown as the title, kind of the way you approach depression. Can you quickly tell us about that?
Sure. So a lot of people have probably seen the carnival game Whack-A-Mole, and that's the vision I have in my head about how I deal with depression when it comes into my life now. And so if you ever watch Whack-A-Mole, you have this mallet and the little moles pop up out of the game, and you try to hit them as fast as you can, and you often miss and hit the wrong thing, and then sometimes you hit the mole itself, and if you pound it down, you get a point and so forth. And that really is, for me, like life. You know, we try things, we can miss, things don't work out sometimes, but when you nail it, you know, it helps and you get ahead. So,
absolutely. You know, and I want to talk about quickly your other books here. You've written The Bold Way Workbook as well. And what you
right.
what Mel does through her writing is that she advocates for all kinds of education, from informal to traditional, as well as e-learning. And more or less a direct, no-nonsense kind of author, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's all connected. Everything's connected.
Absolutely. Mel lives in Indianapolis, Indiana, with her husband and her sweet little 17-year-old poodle, toy poodle Petey, which I had the pleasure of seeing online yesterday. And being an animal lover, we gotta love Petey. But
he's
Mel
our boy.
Describes her. Yeah, absolutely. Mel is a self-described nerd. She loves stirring the pot and shaking things up, and is also a bodybuilder, which I find all those incredibly interesting. So I'm so excited to learn a little bit more about you today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Sure. So I want to go ahead and kind of, if you could, for the listeners, could you go through, you know, what really inspired you to write self-help books, particularly the Bold Way books and Depression Smackdown?
Absolutely. Well, obviously, we writers often write about what we know. That's the old adage you always hear. And so these are the books I wished that somebody had written for me. And I was in a situation a few years ago in a job that was not a fit for me. The culture had changed in the world of education, as a lot of people have known, with the change into Common Core standards from state standards, and from school report cards being a large percentage of how schools are evaluated and teachers are evaluated. And I was also working 2 jobs as a teacher. I was working day school all day long, and then going to night school for another 4 hours in teaching. And both groups that I taught were at-risk students who hated school, very, very low reading capabilities, and the school solution for all of these children was you're going to be forced to read 90 minutes a day. So they were angry and frustrated. I was angry and frustrated, not at the students for being who they were, but at the system and my powerlessness and my inability to fix things. And it just got worse and worse and worse with my frustration. And I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating right. I gave up exercise because I was working too much. And between the situation and the perfect storm that I created by shutting down, cutting down my personal contacts and all that, just trying to maintain a basic existence led to extreme depression. And then I made a huge mistake. And my huge mistake was I was teaching at night, and one kid kept pushing my buttons every day. And most of the time, you know, when you're adult and you're healthy and you're fine, you can let it roll. And I didn't. I went the other way. And I told him to stop leaping around, and we won't say what I said. But the minute I said it, I was aghast. My students were aghast. The whole room went quiet. I apologized, and then I said, that's conduct unbecoming as a teacher. It's inappropriate. It won't happen again. But the bottom line is, you got to cut it out. And I immediately reported myself to my supervisor. And next thing I know, I was under investigation for misconduct. And the assistant superintendent of my school district threatened to not only fire me from my position, but remove my teaching license. And then I really internalized the whole thing and took full blame and started really being angry at myself, to the point where I made myself insanely sick with my depression. And so I ended up being hospitalized in the long run. So that's where these books came from.
Wow. I mean, there's such a backstory. And, you know, you and I talked about this yesterday. You know, more or less, just to kind of reiterate, you said the F word in class to students, but it had been building up, though. I mean, this was abnormal for you, but it came out. You apologized, but it was after all these different things had built up. I know you had mentioned earlier to me that you had been doing a curriculum for the class, and at the very last minute they changed it, and some of your coworkers weren't picking up the slack. And so there's a lot of factors that went into this prior to your outburst, we'll say. And so can you walk us through, you know, you kind of mentioned that it happened. So what happened after that? At that point, you got admitted, correct?
Yeah, what had happened was I knew that I was depressed, and I knew I needed help. And it wasn't the first time I'd walked the road of depression. Many years ago, I had to have an unplanned hysterectomy due to some health issues. And so I had some hormone problems with that and had depression. So in the past, I had a doctor and a therapist. So I started off reaching out to both of them because they had been my caretakers in the past and helped me get through that. Well, I called the doctor and I was told the doctor was out, and I didn't know what that meant. The doctor actually had life-saving surgery and would not be returning. So I lost my doctor. And then I went to call my therapist, and her name wasn't on the call directory, and so I left a message, and I got a call back that she had retired. So the two support systems that I thought I could rely on if that ever happened again were gone. So I went to my general practitioner, who was very understanding, and he put me on a medication, and I did not know the side effects of the medication. And one of the side effects is increased anxiety and suicidal thoughts. And so one night, a couple of weeks later, I ended up with a bad case of Sunday blues that came into the whole night. I was up all night worrying, saying impossible things to myself, like, they don't want me there, I'm not helping anybody anyway, I just ought to run away. And then before I knew it, thoughts about killing myself popped in my head. And I thought, this is not me. This is not normal. I'm a glasses half full kind of woman. And so I went to the ER for help. And so they took me in. They didn't say anything about the procedures or anything. They just took me in, had me put on my gown, go through a couple of basic tests, blood tests, urinalysis, and wait in the room. And then a nurse came in and said, so, have you ever done this before? And she scared the living daylights out of me because she said to me, we don't have a mental health ward here. Actually, what we have to do is you are now under our custody and you cannot leave. And we have to find your room in a facility. And it may be up to 4 days before a room is available. You're not allowed to leave this room. Your husband can't come and get you. And once we find you a room, we will transport you, but it can't be by ambulance. The police will take you.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how I ended up in that custody.
You know, that's such a scary situation to be in. And I'm going to stop you just right here for a minute because we do have a caller on the line. But first, before I get to the caller, can you let people know where they can find you on social media or websites or phone numbers, email, however they can reach you so that if people have more questions or want to learn more about what you do, they can get in contact with you?
Sure. So I am not a doctor or a therapist. I am an author. But you can connect to me, the work that I've done, and see my book and my other books that I've written through my website, MsMelEdwards.com. So MsMelEdwards.com. On Twitter, I'm Mel_Edwards. I'm on Pinterest as Ms. Mel Edwards and Facebook as Ms. Mel Edwards.
Awesome. Thank you. And just a reminder for the listeners that are following me, you can find me online on my website at ectorlifestyle.com. That's ectorlifestyles.com. Or on Facebook, Valerie Ector. Feel free to friend me or send me a friend request or a message. And I am also on LinkedIn, Valerie Ector as well, too. So I'm going to go ahead, and I believe we have a caller on the line here. I'll go ahead and get them. If your phone number ends in 4694, do you have a question for Mel?
Hello, this is Greg from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Greg.
I was just listening, but I guess the question I would have is, do doctors understand or have any kind of knowledge of energy work or how coaching can actually be cheaper and more effective than medicine? I mean,
I can address that
like,
a little bit. Go ahead.
It just seems like there isn't really an understanding of mental energy or emotional energy. And for somebody that's been involved in a lot of different prayer ministries, meditation circles, and things like that, it's real easy to understand how an event like you experienced could really bring you down.
Absolutely.
But most people don't understand that they can switch gears if they have the right support staff, or they don't even know where to go for energy type work.
Okay. Well, I have a couple things I can add to that and a piece of information that will be even a surprise to Valerie. And that piece of information is I actually happen to be a Reiki master. And I was a Reiki master before I got sick. But when I was depleting myself of proper nutrition and proper sleep and proper support from friends, I was just barely existing. And so I didn't even have the energy to use the tools at my own disposal. As far as what doctors know and don't know, it really depends from institution to institution that they were trained at. I have worked with general practitioners who do use Reiki and other energy work and advise for that type of outreach opportunities for people, likewise therapists who have recommended those sort of things to different people. But if you look at what a general practitioner studies while they're in their 4 years of school, they have to learn so many different modalities that they spend on average 8 weeks on any specialty. And I don't know about you, but I sure as heck cannot master something in 8 weeks to be able to do that for the rest of my life. And that's why they continue to have things like continuing education and so forth. But like the rest of us, there's only so many hours in the day, and you've got to go for the things that will best help the patients you're serving the most. And I would guess that there are very few patients who even know to ask about those alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to interject there too, real quickly. I agree with you 100%, Mel. I mean, the reason why we are coaches and why we talk so passionately, you know, me about anxiety and panic that I suffered through, and you about depression, is because, first of all, you touched on it briefly. There is a stigma about having a mental illness like that. But also people don't know that there are outlets, coaches like us that have been through the trenches who can speak about this subject and help you through it. Telling you about the meditation practices that we use, or even getting you in contact, you know, with a licensed professional who does these trainings. But you're absolutely right. Physicians, you know, they have their practices, and they are doing the continuing eds, but they also rely on people like us to spread the word and, you know, get depression, anxiety, and other mental illnesses out to the forefront, because people don't know that there are a ton of resources available for help, and it's not just, medicine or, you know, some of the other outlets that people use. There's a wealth of possibilities for help. So did you have any other questions then?
I had a comment. I used to be really good at dislodging negative energy from people. At the time, I was involved with some different groups that were in Unity. And whenever that Unity left, it seemed like that ability went with it. It was a slow progress, but I didn't get it back until I got involved with some online meditation groups and prayer meetings and reestablished a unity. And the thing was, just like that positive energy can be amplified and it can help us bring us into the present moment in a positive way, I'm a big believer that in a situation where you're dealing with either accusation or gossip at the workplace, because it spreads, you can also get that amplified negativity. That one person, even though they have the tools, it'd be really hard to deal with the weight of that negativity. It almost becomes like a living force.
You know, and Mel actually kind of talked about that a little bit. And Mel, you mentioned, you know, when you were lying in bed there, that self-talk all of a sudden started creeping in. And you know, your doubt about, oh, they don't need me, I'm not providing value, and then it even went further where you talked about suicide, you know, that crept into your head. You know, can you talk about why it was so important for you to move out of that space, that headspace, and why you decided to, you know, go and get help?
Sure. As I was talking to myself, I'm not one of those people, and I even mentioned this in the book, you know, you hear sensational news stories about, you know, I killed so-and-so because the devil made me do it or whatever. I'm not of that camp. I fully realized at all times that I was in control of that voice. But things started sounding easier than facing my fears. And that's when I knew that I was really in a bad space, because I'm not someone who's normally timid about those sort of things. As you mentioned earlier in my intro, I do like to stir the pot, change the status quo, look for new opportunities, and I wasn't doing that for myself. And so that was a big red flag, and I said, I need to get help before I do something I regret. And so that's when I got in my car and went to the hospital.
Right, right. And so you had mentioned you got to the hospital, and you were not allowed, well, I guess move forward with your story a little bit, because I know you had mentioned that they somewhat held you. You weren't able to speak with your family and friends once you actually got to the facility, correct?
Right. Once I got to the facility, first I was horrified of the intake process. It was very clinical and very normal for them, but it felt to me like a prison, because all the doors that I had to pass through could only be opened through a buzzer or a key. So I could not leave a room or leave the building or anything like that. And, you know, you see those things in movies where, you know, you hear the prison doors slam shut. And it was that kind of feeling. And then I got into the room and they had to inspect my whole body for anything that looked abnormal. What they were really looking for was I doing self-harm, like some people are cutters or, you know, whatever that may be for themselves. And they were just assessing how serious my situation was. But I felt very violated having to be poked over and looked at like that. And the room that they had us wait in most of 12 hours a day was called the day room. And there were two groups of patients. And group A was considered what they call the high-functioning patients, people like myself who understood what was going on and needed help and were seeking help. And then group B were people who could not understand what was going on. They were highly incapable of understanding their situation. They may not know who they were or where they were. They may be having psychotic delusions and so forth. So we were all in the same room, and I was told you could only have a phone call if you used the payphone in the day room, and we have to dial for you. And you have to know the numbers. And I couldn't remember my mother's phone number because she had moved from where I was as a kid. And, you know, in the day of cell phones, you hit a button and that dialed somebody's phone number. So I couldn't call my mom. And I was able to call my husband. And the only visitation they allowed was for an hour on Tuesday night, an hour on Thursday night, and an hour on Saturday afternoon. And I just felt really trapped, really alone, and really disempowered in that situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I want to give the call-in number real quick here, Mel, because this is just fascinating. I mean, your story, I think, can impact and touch so many people. The call-in number, if you have a question for Mel, is 646-716-7979. I will repeat that again, 646-716-7979. And Mel, one more time, can you can you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you after the show if they want to learn more about your books or talk with you?
Sure. It's MsMelEdwards.com. I have a contact sheet on my website. If you just look at the menu, contact is one of the buttons you hit up there, and you can fill that out and email me, and we can get in contact that way, or Twitter, you can reach out to me anytime that way. And I'm on Facebook also, both of those cases, Ms. Mel Edwards on Facebook, Ms. Mel Edwards on Pinterest, and Mel_Edwards on Twitter.
Wonderful. And if anyone wants to contact me as well, if you're having problems getting in contact with Mel, you can reach me online at www.echterlifestyles.com. That's echterlifestyles.com. Or you can find me on social media, Facebook and LinkedIn, at Valerie Echter. Now, I want to get back into your story here, Mel, because at this point you are in, can I call it a mental institute? Would that be right? The right term?
I would say that would probably be an appropriate term, because that's all they did is serve people with mental health challenges.
Okay. So you're in a mental institute. However, you're still understanding things. What's the term you use? You're the in regard to the people you were rooming with, you're one of the people that actually understand.
Right.
What's that?
We were considered highly functional was the term they used.
Yes, yes. So you're one of the highly functional people who just knows that you're suffering with about a depression and you're looking for some outlets for that or some help. Yet you're in a room for 12 hours a day with people who are suffering maybe to a lot further of an extent with than you are. I mean, what does that? How scary of a situation was that for you in regard to not really knowing, you know, what your extent maybe was?
I can say I was pretty terrified. The first images that came to my mind within, you know, minutes of being there was, first of all, there was a patient. She was doing some vision work with seeing spirits, and so she was yelling, "Jesus, use me as your instrument." And, you know, I have no issues with people being religious, but in her situation, she felt she was seeing things that the rest of us couldn't see. And some people may say that's a gift, but in her case, it was a chronic problem with seeing people that nobody else could see. It was what they called a delusion and visions. And so I watched two aides and a nurse literally take her down to the ground and force three injections of sedatives into her. And the first thing I thought was, do they still do shock therapy? And I was thinking of Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was wondering, are they going to do that to me?
Right. And so at that point, you are ready to more or less be well, I'll say, and you want to get out of there, correct?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be as far away from that place as possible. Had no ability to do that. When they actually admit you into these places, most states have a policy that once you're admitted, you have to stay a minimum amount of time. And the place I was living at the time, that minimum amount of time is 5 days. And what happens is they submit your case information to a judge and to the facility doctor. And there was one doctor for the whole facility. And I was told, you won't even see the doctor till the next day. So there I am trying to get help. They're not changing my medication. They're not really addressing much of anything. And they're saying there will be another day to you see the doctor and get to talk to somebody about your treatment. And you can't leave for at least 5 days. And they told me the possibility it could be much longer depending on what I needed. And it could be 2 weeks. And while I was there, one of the women there who was in my group, the highly functional group, was told on Tuesday she was going to get to leave, and I hadn't yet met with a doctor. It was Tuesday morning, and she was all excited, dressed, ready to go, packed. And while we were in one of our art therapy sessions, she got pulled out into the hallway by the doctor, and she came back in crying, and I said, "What happened?" And she said, "The doctor has recommended I have to stay longer." And I thought, oh, my God. They can do that to you. You know, they can say, and she wasn't doing anything that I thought was out of the ordinary.
Yeah. So at that point, I'm assuming you were wondering, when are you going to get pulled in the hallway and told you have to stay longer, correct?
Right. Because I have been in education and worked with therapists and had the background that I've had, I was well aware of, you know, they wanted to see what I was learning, what I was using, and what coping skills I had. And I thought, I can't lose it while I'm in here. Even if I want to break down, I was afraid to, because I was afraid they'd say, oh, well, you're never going to leave, you know. And I just felt completely powerless. It really, truly felt as close to prison as I probably will ever get in my life, God willing. And and I just felt like I had to parrot back whatever it is they wanted to hear and play nice and follow the rules and just wait it out.
Yeah. So, and I want to kind of reiterate and go back a little bit. Your bout of depression, you said at the beginning, had kind of been creeping up for a while. Do you feel that, and then you had the one outburst, the one outbreak in class where you said the F word, and it kind of all spiraled downhill from there. While working with clients, do you see often that others have that one moment where they just crack, kind of like you did?
Yeah, you know, there's a famous business book called The Tipping Point, and if you keep working towards something positive, it will get to the tipping point and roll in your favor. I think it goes the other way as well, that, you know, so often we put our self-care on the back burner. I just have to take care of my spouse or the kids or my job or whatever it is we have to get done. You know, I'll wait till the season's over or whatever it happens to be that we do that we're putting so much of our time and energy into, and we just let these things add up and add up and add up to the point where there is one more thing that just makes it unbearable, and that's when the dam breaks. And for most of us, the dam can break and we can have a couple of lousy days and be better. But because of the medication I was on top of everything else, it enhanced my anxiety and it enhanced my feelings of depression. And suicidal thoughts are listed on the side effects of the drug. And at no point did somebody sit down and explain that to me. And, of course, being the type of patient that I was at the time, I didn't spend a lot of time looking that up before I started taking it. I was just so happy to have an opportunity for something to make me feel better. I just took it without questioning. And that, again, wasn't part of my normal reaction. If I had been my healthiest self and the doctor said, you know, do you want to take this or that, I could have made a better choice. And likewise, even when I was in the hospital, when I finally did get to see the doctor, he did give me a choice. I went in on a Monday, and on Tuesday I got to see him. And Tuesday afternoon, he gave me a choice if I wanted to be on sleeping pills or take melatonin because I hadn't been sleeping properly. And I did choose the melatonin because I know that is a natural alternative. And he put me on 3 tablets of melatonin a night. And for a lot of people, that's an extreme amount, that one a night is more than enough. If I took that now, I'd probably be out for a week. But at the time, I needed that. You know, it was important to get my rest back. And he realized if I wasn't sleeping, everything else would continue to spiral and build from there.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, you know, obviously you have the 5 books that you're working on here, and we'll finish out your story in a minute, but so how are you connecting with your readers to support them through their life challenges if they're going through, you know, similar bouts of depression?
That's a great question. You know, the main reason I wanted to get the books out wasn't to be a big look at me. It was to help other people and to let people know what they could end up facing if they end up in a major depressive episode, and to see what was out there, because I had no idea until I went through it that you could actually become committed and a ward of the state technically for just going, thinking I was going to get, you know, a medication change and go home and actually go to work that day. So in addition to reaching out through the books, I have an email list, and I call it Overcoming Obstacles, Build Your Dreams. And I do email my list every single day, and with something that is connected to doing those things, overcoming our obstacles in life and building your dreams, the positive towards what you want for the future, whatever that happens to be for you. And then in addition, to really rev it up through the holiday time, because I know the holidays can be really tough for people, and people overdo, overcommit, under caretake, is I've developed a challenge for the month of December, and I call it Up, Ready, Move. And the first 10 days focus will be about getting your energy up, your spirits up, doing things that take care of you. The next 10 days will be deciding what you want to manifest for yourself within the new calendar year and working through that plan. And then the last 10 days is start making those little baby steps each day. And all of that is free. And if people go to my website, MsMelEdwards.com, and go to my products and services, the Up Ready Move Challenge picture is right there. You just click on it, and you just fill out your contact information, and you just get free daily emails. and you're part of the group, and you can stay for the whole challenge, which I hope people would do. Or if it's not a fit or they need something more, they can reach out to me.
Awesome, awesome. You know, the books I know are just so helpful. So please go to our website and take a look at those. And now they're ebooks, correct? But you're getting hard copies shortly?
Yeah, it's all a process. It's baby steps. I can crank out books really fast, but I can't make everything else work as fast as I want and work a job. So I have to do everything in baby steps. So everything is ebooks right now. Right now, I am waiting for the official green light from Amazon, which owns Audible, and those audiobooks. And as soon as I get the green light from them, they're done proofing. Depression Smackdown will be an audiobook, The Bold Way, and The Bold Way Workbook. And I expect those all to be available between the 1st of December and mid-December. And so if somebody's on the email list, the Overcoming Obstacles list, they'll know right away as soon as they are available. And then right now I'm waiting. Hopefully tomorrow I will have my cover for the print edition of Depression Smackdown, and then that will be coming out.
Awesome. You know, just in time for the holidays, like you said, the holidays can be a very tough time. Overcommit was a great word during that time, stressful. You know, it might be a great book, you know, to give to a loved one who you know might be suffering from a bout of depression. So please get on Mel's emailing list so that you can be one of the first people to know when those books get out. I do want to give the call-in number just real quickly one more time here. We got about 20 minutes left in the show. The number is 646-716-7979. I'll give that to you one more time. 646-716-7979. Now, I want to move forward a little bit here, Mel, because you were able to get out of the mental institute and more or less go back to work as a teacher, correct?
Right. I got out on a Saturday and went back to work Monday. I had contacted my supervisor and let my supervisor know that I was out of the hospital. Supervisor knew I was in a hospital, did not know where I was, you know, due to HIPAA laws and so forth. And so it was up to me to provide an excuse for why I disappeared for a week. And so I provided that documentation to my supervisor, who understood completely and asked for permission to put a copy in my file, just to explain my unplanned absence for that week. And when I got home that Saturday, even before I went to work the following Monday, I said to my husband, I'm never, ever going back to a place like that. And it wasn't that the people there weren't trying to help, but it was really clear from the way things were set up, the amount of staff to the number of patients to the condition of the facility, that they were greatly underfunded and greatly underprepared to deal with all the things that they had to deal with. And so I had paid a lot of attention, of course, to the other people in my highly functioning group. And I learned while I was there, I was the only one who had never been in a facility before. I was the only one who didn't also have a drug and alcohol problem. I was the only one who had a full-time job. And I said to myself, this is not you. This is not the life you've had before. This is not the life you want for the future. What are you going to do to fix this that is in your power? And so that's when I started engineering, as you would say, constructing my health again. And so I was sleeping because I was taking the melatonin to help me do that. I continued on my prescription that the doctor had given me. I started changing my diet from the highly processed foods to more whole foods, and I started walking again just to get some kind of exercise. I didn't have energy to do a whole lot more than that, but I was determined to do all of those things. And when I went back to work, I was determined to continue to see my future not through the eyes of my illness, but through the eyes of my past choices. And that made a huge difference. Because once you've been locked in a place like that, you know, whether or not a child is wearing their ID in school or following dress code is minimal compared
yeah.
to being locked away and losing your freedom. And even though I had had one administrator that I worked with who was really, really on the warpath about those two things, the IDs and the dress codes all the time, I could take it with a grain of salt. And I learned how to pay attention to that again instead of just walking around going, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this, and building that negativity and focus on what I liked. And I didn't miss another day for the rest of the school year. A lot of positive things happened the rest of the school year, but I was determined at the end of the school year to walk away from being a public school teacher. And it wasn't that I hated students at all. It was I wasn't living my full dream. And as you were saying earlier in the call, you know, we have the opportunity to create the life that is different for us, that makes ourselves fulfilled and happy. And I knew I wanted to continue to work in education. I knew that I really liked writing curriculum, that, you know, when the rug got pulled out from under us in the beginning of the school year and we were told everything we had planned we had to throw out because we were changing to a district-wide Common Core curriculum, I had been able to create quite a bit, and it was a big frustration to lose all that I had created. So I looked for a position that allowed me to do that. Now I work for a university doing that and love it, love the people I work with, and want to continue to support educators and education and students especially, and continue to work in a direction that makes me feel empowered with my skills while also working on my visions about changing the thoughts around mental illness and self-care and self-help.
Mm, absolutely. So I've seen your website, and I noticed you say change agent. Is that what
mm-hmm.
you're referring to then?
Yeah, I think the world obviously has changed quite a bit since education started. Our world will continue to change as technology grows, and we need to change with it. And, you know, as someone who doesn't mind stirring the pot and looking at new opportunities, I was lucky enough recently to present at a national conference on e-learning and using digital badges, which are like icons. If anybody's ever used something like the Fitbit and gets little rewards for whenever they get their steps for the day or whatever, that's what a digital badge is. So
mm-hmm.
anything that I can share that will let people be rewarded for what they're doing right, focus on their own health, focus on their own success, uphold education and productivity and living your life your way, which is where the bold way comes from, living your truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's all something I'm going to continue to do into the future.
Absolutely. That is wonderful. So I am curious, you know, you seem very passionate and driven. What is your big, scary dream, you know, regarding mental health?
I think the biggest dream that I have really is having everybody realize that mental health is no different than other physical health. And the analogy I like to use is this. We often are so afraid to be labeled because of the stigma of mental health around things like depression and anxiety and body image things like anorexia that we don't tell people when we have these challenges. But treating those things as untreatable, scary, dividing things is like telling somebody with a virus that they have a terminal condition of AIDS. And we know that 30 years ago when AIDS was pretty new in our lexicon, that we were really terrified and not even sure you could get it from a mosquito bite. And so there was a lot of fear and self-protection going on with that. Now we know that people with HIV do not have to have a death sentence, that they can have a good, fulfilling life. And likewise, somebody with any of these other mental illness issues, you can be cured. You can get away
mm-hmm.
from it and live the way you always lived before because you've learned new skills, new self-care, you change your dynamic. And people need to have these conversations, because when I got out of the hospital and started sharing my story, I was astounded by the number of people who would come to me on a daily basis, colleagues and friends and family members who said, oh, well, I never told you. And they were in the same boat. And I learned from my research for the book that at any given time, 20% of the world's population can have some form of depression. And that's 1 in 5 people. And I want people to just realize 1 in 5 people can have a lot of different illnesses. And this does not make you less than or unemployable or untrustworthy or anything else.
Absolutely. You know, I was blown away by the statistics, you know, being a social anxiety sufferer. When I went to get medication, because at that point in time, that's all I thought the help was available, was just medication for anxiety. And the doctor looked at me because I felt alone. I felt like I was the only one in the world suffering from this. And she said, Valerie, about 50 to 75% of the women your age that come see me every day, I have to prescribe some sort of anxiety medication for. You are not alone. And I was blown away.
That is huge. Huge.
Yeah.
That's such important, empowering information. Because if we're judging ourselves negatively for being ill, how are we going to get better?
Yep. You know, you write in one of your blog posts that even if you have a 1 in a million issue, there are 7,000 people that have the same issue. So do you think that feeling of being alone is our biggest hurdle?
Absolutely. And, in fact, I often send out tweets or put blog posts or posts on Facebook about you are not alone and to be safe and to be well and, you know, to take care of yourself, because all those things are really, really important. And, you know, I've heard on the opposite end, on the positive end, if somebody's building a really big business, they get what's called imposter syndrome, where they feel like, oh, who am I to create this? I'm just a nobody, you know, I'm just a normal person. I'm the person who had these challenges in life. And we do the same thing with mental illness. We say, you know, I have this problem, so I can't do this. Or we think people will judge us. And the truth is, if 20% of us are in that same boat, we have no reason to be judging each other. We have every reason to be supporting each other.
Absolutely. You know, another comment that you wrote on your website, and this one kind of stuck with me because I tell a lot of my health coaching clients this. You wrote, we cannot control others or systems, and sometimes we cannot even control our initial emotional response. But we can decide how we elect to deal with things once the bomb drops. And you put in parentheses, even the F-bomb, since that was something relating to you.
Yeah, that was my big mistake, right.
Yeah, that's such a powerful
statement. Yeah, so often we say, you know, woe's me, I can't do anything. You can do something. You can eat a nutritional meal. You can get some sleep. And if you're not sleeping well on your own, there are natural alternatives to help you with that. You can have, like you said, a nighttime routine. My husband and I have an alarm that goes off at 8:45 every night that tells us to shut off the darn instruments that we're playing with and start winding down so that we can go to bed. Because if we have an alarm to get up, why not an alarm to shut it down? You know, so that's what we do for our own self-care. We have a lot of power. And in my case, when I was teaching and things were changing with the system and so forth that were beyond my control, all I kept feeling was how little power I had. And that's what, you know, led me to my spiral. Once I started realizing, no, I still have the power to change the tone of the classroom and how I take care of myself and treat students the way I always wanted to treat them anyway, as individual human beings who can do whatever they want. They are not a grade. They are not a test score. They're failures. You know, they are their hopes, their dreams, just like the rest of us. Then I started to get better.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I want to thank you for sharing your story. You know, it's so enlightening. And just the fact that you went through this episode and it was really life-changing, dealing with the depression and what the path that it led you down. And I advise all my listeners to check out Mel's website. Can you give us all your contact information one more time, Mel?
Absolutely. It's MsMelEdwards.com, MsMelEdwards.com. And then on Twitter, it's Mel_Edwards. And then on Pinterest and Facebook, it is also Ms. Mel Edwards. And I have a ton of Pinterest things that help with depression and anxiety. Last time I checked, I had over 700 pins to deal with depression
Wow.
and anxiety. So, yeah, I get busy on there. Actually, that's part of my wind down. Once our alarm's gone off for the night, I often just play with pretty things on Pinterest. I've made things about things for the garden and things for the home and just pretty things that I like to see, geeky stuff that I think is funny. And in doing that, I often come across things that are positive quotes that help with success and so forth. And so I have a board on the bold way, a board on success, and then I have a lot of them around learning and education and so forth. So there's a ton of information there. Last time I knew about 8,000 posts of
Wow.
things that I had pinned. Yeah. So I have
oh
tons of resources.
You know, I am curious. When do you fit this bodybuilding in then? That's very interesting to me. Can you explain just in a few minutes about that?
Sure. So bodybuilding is something I've been interested in for a really long time. If anybody ever follows bodybuilding, way back in the 80s, I used to get Muscle & Fitness magazine. And I followed Corey Everson, who was Ms. Olympia for many years in a row. And I was just fascinated by how strong and powerful you could be in your own right and was very interested in lifting weights and so forth. I am a grade A klutz, so I don't play team sports. I broke my ankle playing kickball with the Girl Scouts to tell you the kind of klutz I am. But... But I can lift weights. It's something I could do on my own. It's something I can push my own limits to go where I want to go. I compete only with myself and how I get stronger and more capable. And so when I do my workouts each day, if I'm not doing cardio, I'm lifting weights. You know, a lot of people are into CrossFit and so forth, but I love to lift weights. My husband says I lift more than he does, but I love it. It's just very exciting for me to see what I'm capable with my own physical strength. Instead of putting myself down as being a grade A klutz, I can say, but I can, you know, do so many sets of this weight and so forth. So it makes me feel good about myself.
Well, not to mention, it's a great outlet. I actually turn to exercise. My go-to was running, you know, when I was dealing with my anxiety. And, you know, you've gone to bodybuilding, and it's a personal goal. And it's not only healthy, it does your mind good, too.
Absolutely. And I have a Pinterest board on that, too. Imagine that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, I just want to kind of close out this show here. I always finish with just a quick meal, a grounding recipe of the day. And my recipe today is just the mini peppers. You can get them in a bag at the grocery store, cut them in half. They come in all different cool little colors, red, green, and yellow, and fill them with cottage cheese. The mini peppers have 270% of your daily need of vitamin C, which helps build immunity, and cottage cheese is your protein source. So that's it. Just a quick tip for my recipe of the day. I want to thank my guest, Ms. Mel Edwards, author extraordinaire of 5 books this year, a defeater of depression. As she talked about, she loves stirring the pot, and please go visit her website and grab one of her books for Christmas.
Thank you so much.
My show today. Yeah, no problem. That's going to conclude the show today for Engineered Wellness. Our next show is on December 3rd, and we will have more grounding tips and journaling away the stress and more recipes and great coaches who provide information on stress, anxiety, and depression. That's it. We'll see you on December 3rd. Have a great day.